This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Denver filmmaker Annie Eastman once lived in a slum in a coastal city of Brazil. Life was difficult there, but her neighbors' lives were far more unstable, literally. In Bahia, Brazil, a lack of affordable housing has led people to build on a bay, driving stilts into the mud below and creating entire neighborhoods that hover above the water and sometimes fall in. Eventually, the government announced a plan to destroy these slums on stilts and move people to new housing on land. It's the subject of her film Bay of All Saints, which screens Sunday and next Wednesday at the Stars Denver Film Festival. Annie, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Ryan.
This is such a remarkable film, and it takes place in what are called in Portuguese the palafitas. These are shacks built over water. Describe what you saw, what you felt when you first saw the palafitas.
You know, I was shocked. I had moved down there to work with a grassroots organization that does arts and education projects with kids. And the very first day I was there, they took me into their school, which had a third-story balcony, and it overlooked an entire slum filled with these shacks built on the water. And, you know, what I remember is just feeling dizzy from the smell, the odor coming up off the water. It was of, you know, sewage and trash mixing together. And I just never imagined that most of those homes would actually belong to single mother families, and that inside most of those homes, they're just immaculately decorated and kept well. And, you know, the house cleaning is such a priority. It's such a stark contrast.
You talk about the smell, and this is because there is no plumbing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they're off the grid. It's a slum. So they illegally plug into the electrical grid and the water grid. And of course, that's always breaking down and, you know, needs constant repair.
So when it comes to tapping the electrical grid, for what kinds of amenities, how have they outfitted these homes?
You know, they do have most things that you would expect to find in a home. They have telephones, they have refrigerators, there's even a couple people that have computers inside their shacks.
What were your impressions the first time you went up close to them? So you talked about seeing them from this vista above. Tell me about the first time you stepped foot in the palafitas.
Well, it's shocking. I mean, you know, walking along the bridges, I mean, it feels quite precarious. The stilts are, you know, between 5 and 10 meters in some places. And so the bridges are wobbling and it feels like you could fall in the water at any point. And
these are bridges between homes?
Yeah, the homes are connected through a network of bridges. But, you know, walking in and meeting with people for the first time, you experience an entirely different environment within the homes where they do so much to maintain dignity and cleanliness and really create a sense of home within each shack.
You saw all this and you lived among the people of the palafitas. And what made you decide to make a film about them?
Well, I had heard that the government had plans to eradicate the slum. And that just naturally struck me as something that was worthy of documenting and capturing on film. So I picked up a camera and just started following the lives of some of the families in the slum.
You picked up a camera. It sounds like that's something you hadn't necessarily done before.
Exactly. Yeah, I wasn't a filmmaker going into this. But when I heard about this story, I thought this would be a transformation worth documenting. If nothing else, this set of characters was going to end up in a very different place than where they started. And I was curious to see how that would affect their lives personally and their view of their community and how they live.
What was the reaction when these folks learned that they were going to be basically relocated and what they knew as home would be destroyed?
Well, that was an interesting reaction to follow because I think in the first couple of years, they very much feared this intervention and they really didn't want any help from the government. They had a sense of place in their own community and a sense of dignity in how they'd created their lives. But then as the years passed, they feared it in a different way. They feared that they were going to be abandoned, that they would be displaced and not given any other option.
As you alluded to, the film focuses on women who live in these shacks, three of them in particular. But it's also told through a refrigerator repairman named Narado.
He was really the first person I talked to when I had the idea to take a camera out into these shacks and start filming. for many reasons. One, that he has this intimate connection with just about every family there.
He's sort of our guide.
He's sort of our guide in the film, and he certainly has been my guide for many years. So he plays a crucial role in these families' lives because, as I mentioned, they're off the grid. So their infrastructure, it's all jerry-rigged. They're illegally tapping into the energy grid and the water grid. And so those things are always breaking down. So somebody like Norato is crucial because he can come out to your shack and repair those things for you and, you know, restore your energy and fix your refrigerator so you don't lose a week's worth of groceries.
Norato is also super poetic. At the beginning of the film, there's this really gorgeous cinematography that contrasts the high-rise urban life nearby with life on the bay. And Norato says, "People with money live in the sky. Those with nothing live in the water."
Então, quem tem condições mora no céu. Quem não tem, mora na maré.
There's so much meaning in those words. How did he happen to say this? You adopt it as a kind of theme in the film.
He really is a natural poet and just has this sort of lyrical quality to the things he says. And we spent just hours and hours and hours throughout the years recording his voice off camera. He has this incredible way of putting things into simple terms, which I think in some ways is how I got to be such close friends with him. You know, when I first got to the slum, I didn't speak Portuguese at all. Yet somehow he was somebody who I could always communicate with.
So you come not speaking Portuguese. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, like, this white American foreigner, you know, plops herself in this environment. How did you get access or credibility, or how were you even safe in this environment?
It helped that I actually lived in the slum for a year and a half prior to starting the film. So during that time, I got to know a lot of the families and I became fluent in Portuguese. But when I actually had the idea to pick up a camera and go into these shacks, I knew that I was going to be very vulnerable to crime. There's a lot of drug trafficking. There's theft rings. And I contacted Norato first because I knew he could pave the way for me and secure my access and also keep me safe.
So what, he would have conversations with...
Well, what's so incredible about Norato is he is friends with everyone. He talks to the prostitutes. He talks to the drug traffickers. He talks to the, you know, religious evangelicals. And everybody sort of respects him. So he would kind of go ahead and say, you know, "We're going to be out here with a camera. Please just leave us alone." And they always respected him.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're speaking with Denver filmmaker Annie Eastman. Her documentary, which is called Bay of All Saints, is screening at the Stars Denver Film Festival. It takes place in a slum in Brazil where Annie actually lived for some time and was inspired to document the lives of the people there. Sometimes the palafitas collapse and the bridges between them fail. This boy is crying because he's terrified of the water and he's going to have to wade through it a bit to reach a dry spot. Is this a dangerous environment?
It really is a dangerous environment. And, you know, children die every year falling off the bridges or when the houses collapse. And so that's just one of the reasons why nobody could really make a case for this neighborhood, you know, being allowed to continue to exist.
And as we said, the World Bank made money available for the government to relocate people to affordable housing on land. Describe briefly what wound up happening.
The state government promised public housing for each of these families, and they were going to reclaim the bay and restore the ecology. They struggled for many years to even find land nearby to build public housing for these families. In impoverished communities like this one, it's so important that they be resettled someplace close by so they don't have to, you know, find new jobs or find a new social network. So they struggled to find land, and eventually they did. But there just was never the political will to really build the public housing and really make it happen. And even till today, that still hasn't happened.
And your film doesn't necessarily take an investigative angle on this. You know, why haven't these been built? Well, why not?
You know, for years, I spent a lot of time with the public officials and interviewed them and got their side of the story in case we wanted to include it in the ultimate story. But eventually it just felt like the reasons why this didn't move forward, they're both very complex and simple. It really is a matter of lack of political will and bureaucracy. And we could make an entirely different film sort of recounting the details of that, or we could tell a more emotional and a more human story from the eyes of the people experiencing it and sort of allow our audience to understand what was happening through their experience of it.
Do you hope that the film creates change? That somehow the momentum...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm really excited about the fact that just recently it opened in Salvador Bahia at a festival.
This is where the film takes place.
The film takes place. So finally there's an opportunity for us to sort of confront the public officials more directly. And as well, we're hoping to screen it to the World Bank and sort of engage them and hopefully inspire them to take a closer look at this project.
Well, so what of the Palafitas today? Give us a sense for the status of these kinds of slums in this area of Brazil.
The Palafitas still exist. And this is an election year in Brazil, which is usually when you see progress made. But we're seeing less progress with this project. In fact, they've even scaled back their staff and their interest in moving this forward. So I think in that way, I mean, the film couldn't be coming out at a better time.
I gather you feel really invested in this on behalf of these women.
Exactly. I love that they now, through this film, have a tool to sort of raise more attention around this issue. And as the film shows, I mean, they've changed quite a bit in the years that the story has been taking place. They, towards the end of the film, organize and begin a grassroots movement and start to really find ways to engage their public officials. And so I want to see that continue in spite of the obstacles.
That is, they weren't necessarily at all politically minded before
exactly.
This process. And you document in some ways that transformation.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, until recent decades, Brazil was actually a military dictatorship. And now it's a democracy. But I feel like communities like this, they didn't necessarily get the memo. And they still, in some ways, feel like they're not allowed to contact public officials. So just the idea that they can write letters and go to the office and stage protests, that has been, you know, a new and radical concept for them. And I love seeing them engage more fully now and realize that they have rights and that they have a voice that they can use.
Annie, thank you so much for talking with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.
Filmmaker Annie Eastman lives in Denver. Her documentary Bay of All Saints is at the Stars Denver Film Festival Sunday and next Wednesday. You can see a photo of those Brazilian slums we discussed at cpr.org.